I'm going to have to yell a little bit this morning because we do not have that microphone that amplifies the voice that I'm aware of. So I can yak pretty loud. I'll do the best I can. I hope this is working. I'm not sure. I think John knows. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm pretty sure he does know. Today's session is more yakking, so I'll just try to speak up. But I don't know what happened to the thing or what's going on there. Anyway, is this thing on? No, I think it is. Okay. Yesterday, we left off with the ninth step, and we talked about the bedevilments, which are like the anti-promises on page 52. They're what happens to me if I don't work the steps. The promises on page 83 are very, very important, and they're very wonderful, and they're beautiful. What I'm reminded of as we discuss step 9, just to kind of leave step 9 for a minute as we go to 10, 11, and 12, is this. The meeting between Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith took place on May 14th, Mother's Day, in 1935. We count AA's birthday as June 10th, 1935. And the reason that we do not count May 14th as the birthday is because although Dr. Bob was sober for several weeks in May, the last 2 weeks of May he was sober, and for a week or so in June he was sober, there was a medical conference that Dr. Bob had always attended in Atlantic City. And it was the American Medical Association convention that was there, and he was going to the train. And Dr. Bob had one more drunk left in him. And he was drunk, and he continued drinking while there. And he came back to Akron after days of being gone where no one knew where the heck he was. And before he left, actually, Ann Smith begged Bill Wilson to stop Bob from going. She said, please, Bob, don't Bill... She said, please, Bill, don't let Bob go to this convention. He always gets drunk at this convention. And Bill said, Bob is going to have to live in a world of temptation. He's going to have to live in a world where there is liquor. And we are going to have to live in a world where there is food. And there's all kinds of people and psychologists and marketing people trying to lure us in and convince us that this is not going to hurt you. Well, what changed for Dr. Bob is that when he returned to Akron, he had an operation. Bob was a proctologist, and he was the only surgeon that could have performed this particular operation. And he was scheduled for surgery the next morning, but he was very jittery, and he got up. And he said to Bill Wilson, I don't know if I can do this. My hand is really not steady. I don't want to kill the patient. And Bill Wilson did something for Dr. Bob that a lot of AA sponsees wish their sponsors would do for them. He popped open a beer, and he gave Dr. Bob a beer so that the beer would settle him down long enough so that he wouldn't kill the patient. And he told Bob he would wait for him in the parking lot in the car and take him home after the surgery. And Bill was out there for hours and hours and hours, and he finally went back to the Smiths, and no Dr. Bob. Late at night, here comes Dr. Bob. And Bill had feared that the beer triggered the allergy in Bob and that Bob was off on another drunk. What had happened was that Bob Smith, Dr. Bob, went around Akron making amends for the wreckage that he had created with his alcoholism. One of the things that he was to find out is the same thing that a lot of us encounter, and that is, although he wanted certain things to be secret unto him, everyone knew he was an alcoholic, and so it was no secret to them. And he went around, and he made amends to people, and he never found it necessary throughout the days of his life to ever drink alcohol again. And he died in 1951, and he died sober. He died right after the Cleveland Convention, or 1950 rather, I think it was November of 50 he died. And this might be our microphone coming or something. I don't know.
It's on the way.
Okay. I'll just yell. That's fine. I have a big mouth anyway. Just ask anybody that knows me. Okay. So that is so important, and that is I will never, ever think to myself that I can stay out of the food without working all of the steps. And when I have these nine-step amends to make, whatever they are for anyone else, they were very, very scary for me. Very frightening. Now, I did not have to go back and make some of the kinds of amends other people had to make. My amends were mostly money amends. My amends were mostly resentment amends and people that I had offended or harmed. When I looked at the daunting figure of what I had done with relative to money, writing bad checks, I got scared to death. I was frightened. How am I going to pay these people back? What am I going to do that is going to be able to pay these people back for the money that I had stolen from them, writing bad checks, and still function in the here and now? I wasn't really making very much money, but one thing I did know, and I knew this, I didn't think it, I knew it. I knew that if I did not continue working the steps, trusting God, that I was going to eat again. And so I didn't want that. And what I did was I used the big book as my guide and I used my sponsor as my guide. And what I did was I arranged payment plans with every one of those people. I contacted them. I admitted my wrongdoing. I admitted my dishonesty. I admitted the fact that there was no way in the world that I could pay them back all at once and I was going to pay them out. And I think I alluded to this yesterday, but in some of the cases, some of the more commercial cases, not my personal friends, but in some of the ones where it was just business, some of them said, yes, we understand, and we wrote it off anyway, don't worry about it. And I had that happen, and what they did was they wished me well. They appreciated very much that I was, you know, embarking on a program of action that was going to save my life. And they wished me well, and they forgave the debt. In some of the cases, they said, that's a very nice thing you're doing, and when can you start paying us, and how much can we expect? What I had to do was prepare myself for any eventuality. And for me to do that, I need one thing, and one thing only, and that is faith. If I'm not grounded in a faith, in a higher power, then I'm not going to fare forth with this action. I'm going to recoil from it, because it's going to scare the crap out of me. So I had to move forward. It was very, very difficult for me to envision this when I first started. But there is, and I don't have another word to describe it, there is a euphoria that comes over my life when I take these actions. I have had pleasures in my life. I have had good things, good times in my life. And as much as any person has, I have enjoyed things. Because we talk about the other side a lot. I have never, and I stand before you and I stand before God and I will tell this to you, I have never in my life known quite the euphoria, quite that pleasure, that joy that comes from meeting those obligations, settling the debt, and making amends for the wreckage of my past. Do I continue to harm people? Not intentionally, of course. Do I continue to have fears spring up in my life? Of course. Do I continue to encounter different resentments as we collide with the people around us? You bet I do. And no matter how evolved my recovery may get, no matter how faithful I am to the program, I am never going to rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, I'm going to be in conflict with people, places, and things from time to time. And what the big book is going to give me, what the big book is going to direct me to, is a method by which I can live at peace with those things, because what it's going to do is it's going to bring the program now into a very daily kind of thing. And one of the things that I need is something that I can do every day. Because if I had to let it build and let it build and resentments build and fears build and all these emotions build, I believe, and so the big book tells me, that it will only be a matter of time before this thought hits my brain. You know, you haven't had any French fries in a long time. A couple of French fries, you're not going to put back on hundreds of pounds. You could have, you know, and eventually I would eat the fries, I would trigger the physical allergy, I would pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to do this again, and I would repeat that cycle over and over and over again. The mind telling me it's okay and the body ensuring that it's not. And how do I know that? Because I have tempted fate on many, many occasions. I am a compulsive overeater. That is my default mode. My default mode is a liar. My default mode is a compulsive overeater, scared to death and angry as hell. That is who I am, that is what I was born as, and that is what I will die as, unless I am acted upon daily and sometimes moment to moment by an outside force. I hear a lot of things about take it a day at a time, take it a day at a time. Sometimes, and I bet I'm not alone here, sometimes a day at a time is just too daunting for me. Sometimes I have to take it 20 minutes at a time. Sometimes I have to take it 2 hours at a time, depending upon what is going on. And like all of us in this room, I am not immune from the world's events. And so things get challenging in my life and in my home with finances, with the world, with whatever it is for you. And so I need this. I need this on a daily basis. Because if I sweep enough dirt under the rug, I'm going to trip on the rug. No question about that. I'm just going to trip on it. Okay. On page 84 is the beginning of step 10. Now, I'm going to kind of go through 10 and 11 more verbatim, and I'll share with you some things. When it comes to 12, though, I kind of just go out from the heart. But the bottom line is, this is something that I do every single day, and sometimes I have to do it more than once on a day, depending upon what is going on in my life. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch. Now see if you've seen these defects before. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We've seen those in what step? 4. Those are the defects. He left out self-seeking there, but it's the same concept as we had on page 67 in step 4. So if I'm doing an effective 10th step every single day, it is going to do the same kind of purging of these things that step 4 did, but it's going to do it on a more daily, more immediate kind of basis. Okay? When these crop up, it doesn't say if these crop up, okay? It doesn't say if they crop up or maybe they'll crop up. It says when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. In other words, immediate action. The more these things fester in my brain, the more lethal they can become because they can drive me right back into the food. Excuse me. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So the 10th step is beginning to shift me into a constant state of 12th step. The 10th step instruction here is for me to get out of myself. Of myself, I am selfish. Of myself, I am a taker. Of myself, I couldn't care less about my fellow human being unless they're giving me something that I want. When I work this, it makes me resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Now here is a very, very important paragraph coming up, and what I never realized until I stopped doing it is this. I expended unbelievable amounts of energy eating, not eating, fearing, running, denying. Wow, did I spend energy. I remember when I was a little boy and I was going to third grade or fourth grade, we had a science book. And in the science book, we were studying the human heart. And the human heart, it said in our science book in grammar school, will pump enough times in the first 60 years of life to lift a battleship a foot out of the water. I remember this as if it was like 5 minutes ago. And when I think back to that illustration, if I could marshal the energy that I have spent lying, sneaking, hard for a 500-pound guy to kind of sneak around, but sneaking, writing bad checks, living in the guilt, the shame, and the remorse, seeing the landlord coming and running out the back door and trying to get out before he knocked on the door for the rent, which I hadn't paid. When I think of the energy that it took me to procure the food, the energy to lie about it, the energy to eat the food, and the energy to continue living that life, I probably could have lifted a whole naval fleet out of the water a foot. So when that next paragraph says something to me, it says that I can be free of that. And on page 88, we're going to get to a little later, it's going to reiterate something here. But let's look at this. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For this time, by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. React sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Now I'm going to remind myself that I need to keep in fit spiritual condition by doing this every single day. Most binges, most relapse begin taking place about 120 days, 90 days before the food goes in the mouth. The food going in the mouth is not an immediate release from doing the work. What happens is you stop doing the work first. You go to less meetings, you make less calls, you blow this person off, you don't call that person back. The next thing you know, you've stopped doing the very things that were keeping you in fit spiritual condition, and the next thing you know, the food is right behind it, and you can walk around thinking that OA doesn't work. And you can walk around thinking, well, it works for all these other people, but it doesn't work for me. The question is, did I work it? If I work the program, these promises, these things are very, very clear. Very, very clear that it will happen automatically if I do the work. If I do the work. It's easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must, here's another must, carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Not some, not just the activities around food, all of our activities. Here is the 10th step prayer. And I say this prayer every single day. And if you'd like to, I'll invite you to say it with me this morning. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. It's a very simple prayer, and I say it about 1,000 times a day on an average day. I don't want what I want. I don't want my way. My way sucks. My way, my will just flat out blows chunks. It doesn't work. Every single time I think I want this or need that or what have you, it is really something that if I will just trust, do the next right indicated action, oh, something better comes along, and 99 times I didn't even see that coming. I didn't even see that this was one of the solutions. I didn't see that I could live without this for whatever. It doesn't matter what my will is. I don't want it unless it is to serve OA and to serve my God. When John called me and said, will you come to the OA birthday? That's God's will if I'm here. I don't have to fight that. And that's effortless. When I'm doing God's will, my life goes much simpler. When I find myself swimming against the stream and I've got the committee in my head and I'm trying to convince myself that this is what I need to do, what I want, this and that. The answer is no. No, the answer is no. Okay. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. Not suggestions, directions. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. This is not a program for people who want it, and it's not a program for people who need it. This is a program for people who do it. If it was a program for people who need it, we would hold these meetings at Soldier Field. We would hold these meetings at the L.A. Coliseum and the Rose Bowl and arenas, and we would have little discussion groups at the Staples Center. You know, this is what we would do. We would just literally have, you know, 150,000, 200,000 people at a time. This is a program for people who do it. Step 11, something I do every single day. Eventually, I live in 84 to 88. That's where I live in my book every single day of my life. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Now, that's a very important sentence, if I have the proper attitude and I work at it. If I have a really bad attitude and I'm going to yell at God for not giving me what I want, who I want, where I want it, then I'm not going to get anywhere. I have to remember that I have to have the proper attitude and I have to work at it constantly. Yes.
Sorry, we're just trying to get a microphone so he doesn't have to scream.
Okay, thanks. The Holy Roman Empire was neither holy nor Roman. Discuss. Either one. All right. I'll just continue, Christian, until you're back. Okay, I'll just continue. Is that all right if I just keep going? Can everybody hear me? Okay, all right. Okay, now, we have daytime instructions in step 10. Now we're going to get nighttime and daytime instructions in step 11. And these are going to be very specific instructions as to what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. In other words, I don't need any other source. I can utilize this, and I know that the specific instructions are in this book. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? So I'm doing a fourth step again, aren't I? Do we owe an apology? Step 9. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Step 5. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. I'm asking again for guidance from God, and I am once again being reminded by this reading that I must continue to do the work, and I'm going to give God my fourth step, my fifth step, my ninth step in this very paragraph. And what is it nudging me to do again? Is this on? Okay. Is this on? Yeah. What's it nudging me into again? It's nudging me into getting out of myself. It's nudging me into step 12. What could I have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, which means I need to get out of me? Bill found that work with another alcoholic would save the day when all other measures failed. When I think I'm not getting enough love, when I think I'm not getting enough of anything, what I need to do is the last thing I want to do. Because I want to take, and I'm not getting enough. And what about me, and where's mine? And those are the thoughts that will hit my head. Well, what about me, and where's mine, and what the heck is going on here? And those are the thoughts that will lead me right to hell. They always have, and they always will, because they're selfish, and they're based in self, and they're based in ego. And they are the rantings and the ravings of somebody like me who is ego-centered rather than God-centered. So what I need to do, and what I need a sponsor to remind me to do, and what I need all of you to remind me is get out of you and give. And I don't want to hear that, but that's exactly what I need to do. And when I do that, and when I am doing that, I feel better. And that doesn't mean that I get my own jet airplane. What it means is I'm okay with my Honda, with my car. I'm okay with all these other things that I do have in my life to utilize that God gave me as blessings. Overeaters Anonymous will not teach me how to have what I want. It will teach me to want what I have. Overeaters Anonymous, using this book, will change my perspective so that I can live in peace with the world and I will not find it necessary to put food in my mouth that will kill me. I have a God in my life. How I define God is what I told you yesterday. There is one, and it's not me. But what I have to remember is what I work toward the most during the day, what I think about the most during the day, what I do the most during the day defines a God by action. If all I'm doing all day long is thinking about making money, money is my God. If all I'm doing every day is thinking about sex, sex is my God. If all I'm doing every day is thinking about whatever, food, procuring it, eating it, sneaking it, right? Food is my God. I don't want those gods. I want the God who loves me. I have to remember that I have a God in my life, and I can talk to that God, and what I have to stop doing is stop ranting and raving at God and telling God how big my problems are. And I have to show my problems how big my God is. God is bigger than my problems. God is bigger than my ego. And it's the only way for me to get bigger than my ego, because my ego is way bigger than Wrigley Field, way bigger than Sox Park, way bigger than Soldier Field. My ego is endless. And the only force capable to conquer my ego, my demonic, sick ego, is God. How do I do it? Right here. Why do I do it? Because it's the only way I choose to live. Because I want to live free of me. I want to live free of the fear, the selfishness, the self-seeking, the anger, and the dishonesty, and the shame, and the wreckage that that brings. Lying to people never gave me what I wanted, and I kept doing it. Being angry never gave me what I wanted, and I kept doing it. Being scared to death never gave me what I wanted, and I kept doing it. Eating enough food for 50 people never gave me what I wanted, and I kept doing it because I didn't know there was another way. I didn't know what to do. And every time I would think about going to God, I would think I was unqualified, unworthy. That if I was going to go to God, I would have to join a monastery, or I'd have to become a rabbi, or I'd have to do whatever. I don't have to do any of those things. What I have to do is trust that this works. What I have to do is take that action every day. And every single day that I take it is a day when I can feel really, really good, and I don't find it necessary to eat the food. I don't find it necessary to tell the lies. I don't find it necessary to live like I lived. And I never realized how much energy that expended from me and extracted from me until I stopped doing it. If you're like me, you go back to the doctor's opinion and it says, our alcoholic life becomes the only normal one. I never knew there was another way. I never thought there was another way. This opened me up to take very simple actions so that I don't have to live this way anymore. Now what am I going to do in the morning if I'm working step 11? Well, here's the instruction. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. I ask God to direct my thinking 1,000 times a day. 1,000 times a day, I ask Him to direct me. What is it you want me to do? What is it you want me to think? Remember we talked in step 3 about turning our will and our life over to God? And we said that our will is our thinking and our life is our action. I can't do anything without thinking about it first. I'm picking up this glass of water, but I had to think about it first. And so it's my thought life that will get me into trouble a lot of the time there. All the time, it starts in the mind. And so what I need to do is to take that very specific instruction of asking God to direct my thought life, direct my thinking, so that I don't veer off and do something that's my will. Because when I'm doing my will, I'm going to be in trouble. Okay, let's continue. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pray for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Now that's a very important sentence for me. It says, it is not probable that we are, being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. And then it says, we may pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. And what that's telling me is, I don't have to be perfect, but I do have to work this to the best of my ability, and that if I get into some self-will, I am going to, run into some problems. But what does it say then? Nevertheless. It's going to give me the specific instruction. We find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. Just like exercising a muscle, we can all utilize that image in our mind of the person in the gym working out. Well, we wouldn't get results if we weren't in the gym. We were sitting at home watching television, and this is exactly the same thing. Remember, spit spiritual condition. The word condition is the same, whether it's mental, spiritual, physical. It's condition, and it has to be worked at every single day. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will, and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. And that's something I have to really pray about. I'm praying for this, this, and this, but is this something that's selfish, or is this something that's going to help other people too? Other people. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. I have prayers that I say out of a prayer book every morning. I have English translations to Hebrew prayers, and I say them every morning. I never thought I would ever, do that. I never thought that that would ever be part of my life. But based on this, I started doing it, and it's become something that I really do enjoy. And there is a lot of meaning for me in that, which I didn't see years ago at all. But there is a lot now. And even today, when I do that, I have to really remember not to just go through it as if it was some rote exercise or some rote assignment, like, I will not talk in class, I will not talk in class, that kind of thing where you write that out 100 times. No, I want to make sure that I sort of slow myself down, and that can be hard because the chatter in my brain is probably not a lot different than the chatter in anyone else's. So I have to kind of concentrate, slow. And what I need to remember is, be still, for this is God you're talking to. And I hear that still, small voice in the morning, and I'm up real early. I hear that still, small voice, and it says, I love you. I love you. Hold my hand today. I'll take you where we need to go. And when I ignore that voice, I get in trouble. When I listen to that voice, I'm okay. I'm okay. I do hear that, and it's a beautiful thing that I never thought would be mine. My whole life was spent fighting. I don't have to fight anymore. I got no more fight left in me. Unless I stop doing the work, then I'll have all the fight in the world. Because the ego will resurrect itself beautifully. The ego will resurrect itself quickly and demonically. And right behind anything like that is the food. While I'm here visiting Los Angeles, and while I'm here working at OA, my illness is at Kung Fu lessons. My illness is in the gym lifting weights. My illness is doing road work, cardio work. It's waiting to kill me. Food is cunning, baffling, powerful, and patient. Food will take you out. Food doesn't care about my friend Sherry B., who died of this illness, a brilliant therapist in Chicago, a mediator's mediator. Worked in Evanston Hospital for 25 years helping people. She died at 400 pounds because she would not put the food down. I miss her. Why is she important? She's one of the tapestries. She's one of the quilts that we could make that would stretch from here around the world, the loved ones that we've all lost to this disease or are in the process of losing, which can be even more painful. Many of you have people in your lives that are walking dead. It doesn't have to be us. It doesn't have to be me. Food is merciless. It doesn't care who it kills. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives and friends to join us in morning meditation. George, you're supposed to keep me on the straight and narrow there. Sorry about that. As we go through the... Right? Oh, no, I didn't finish. I'm sorry. If circumstances warrant, We ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. The principles, again, are the steps. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. I had to stop focusing on where they were wrong and had to realize where they were right, and that's new for me. Make use of what they offer. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Here's the 11th step prayer coming up. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, this is a very short but powerful prayer. You can say it with me if you like to. Thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. When I find myself hysterically wanting to control a situation, when I find myself operating from that part of the brain that says, do this, do that, do this, say this, I need to settle down. Those thought processes of putting my hands on everything are just going to muck it up worse. They're just going to screw it up even worse. Sometimes what I need to do is remember something that I was taught years ago by my sponsor. Don't just do something, pray there. Don't just do something, pray there. We do not tire so easily. Okay, we become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in a simple way we have just outlined, but this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. There it is again. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. When I came in to OA, I saw and thought and maybe wanted to do things that you've all thought, maybe saw and done. I wanted to come to a couple of meetings and tell everybody what a wonderful way of life this is and that they should come in. I wanted to do a lot of things like that. And specifically, step 12 reminds me that it has said, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, not some of them, all of them. The word that was changed, and I wish we had the time to go over Appendix 2, we don't, unfortunately. The word that was changed from the first printings of the big book and into what we have now was spiritual experience to spiritual awakening. Bill Wilson always said that he had a spiritual experience in the town's hospital, and we talked about that yesterday when he was there and God came to him. He always said he saw the white light of God, and he had a spiritual upheaval, a spiritual experience. And the early AAs were writing into the office and saying, Bill, what are we doing wrong? We're not having that. We're not getting that. We're not coming to that kind of burning bush sort of thing. And so it was changed to spiritual awakening. How do I achieve a spiritual awakening? Well, there's the educational variety like we're having this morning. There's the constant work of the steps, which puts me in a different relationship with my higher power. I have become a different person through the working of the steps. It says on page 63, we were reborn. And I encourage every one of you to read Appendix 2 in the back, where it's a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, that whole thing. It's a very vital thing. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. The big book in the chapter Working with Others tells us what to do, how to do it, and who not to do it with. If there's somebody out there that doesn't want what we have, we leave them alone. If there's somebody out there that is suffering and wants to continue suffering, we leave them alone. What is the message of Overeaters Anonymous? You're carrying it whether you want to or you don't. The message of Overeaters Anonymous is carried by your actions and who you are more than your words. Most people will ignore words and look at deeds. We are carrying a message of the recovery, or we are carrying a message of death. When I was living in Eugene, Oregon, this is a number of years ago, I told you that I have 11 years of abstinence. My daughter is 15 years old, and when my daughter was not quite 2 years old, I was in full-blown relapse. My daughter was not quite two. This would be August. She was born December of 94, so this would be August of 95? No, 96, I think. And I'm in relapse at that time. And my daughter was not quite two. It was a very hot summer day in Eugene, which hot for them is like 90. It's like broiling. And my wife came out of the OA How groups in Evanston and in Chicago, and out of the treatment center groups in Chicago, not the treatment center, the hospital groups, sorry. I don't know why I said treatment center. The hospital groups in Chicago where everything is weighed and measured, and we still live that way today. And my wife had just done a major, major grocery shop. And my daughter and my wife were back to back. I can see them now. My wife was looking out at the counter and weighing and measuring and bagging the food for the week. And my daughter was back to back with my wife, and I was sitting there talking to them, and I'm maybe 425, 450 pounds already by this time in relapse, because, boy, I can gain like crazy. And I'm sitting on the chair, and my daughter picked up her little hand. You know how when they're just coming out of that, like, pudgy kind of stage, they're so cute, you know, you just want to eat them? So she picked up her hand, and she opened up the refrigerator not more than about 3 inches, and she held it open, and she turned her head to my wife and said, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here." If looks could kill, I would have been vaporized on the spot. All that would have been left there was just my clothes. I would have been evaporated into the night. When my daughter was about 4 years old or 3 years old, right before I got abstinent, this is just weeks before I finally got abstinent, my daughter was in the car, and there was a spaghetti dinner at her little nursery school up in Eugene. And I came home from work at about 3:30 that day, 3:45 maybe the latest, and my daughter would not come out of my wife's car. She was in the car, she was in her back seat strapped in, and she would not come out of the car. She was crying. My wife was just hysterical crying. The reason that my daughter would not come out of the car is because there was a spaghetti dinner at her school, and she did not want me to attend. And she is not coming out of the car until I promise not to go. And the reason she didn't want me to go is she didn't want her friends' parents and her friends and her teachers to see how fat I was. Those were three of the loneliest hours I have ever spent on this earth. And that's as low as I was going to go. A couple of weeks later, in December, on the 29th of December of that year, I got abstinent. And I have remained so ever since. Thank you. My God, thank you. Recently, now we were living in Arizona at the time, there was a major television program on ABC, NBC, I think it was NBC. And there was a show about a man, and it was in prime time, and this is, I'm in recovery, I'm doing the deal. At that time, I had, 7 years, 8 years, whatever it was, I don't remember. And my daughter had been very exposed to different things and, you know, exposed to my life and exposed to my wife's life. and I was watching this television program, and she turned to me. She came into the room and she turned to me and she said, "He's just doing his eighth and ninth step, right, Dad?" That's how far we had come without a word. That's how far we had come through action. What is it I can do today for the still suffering compulsive overeater? I can recover, recover, and recover. I can go out there, and if people ask me, I can tell them what I have found. I can share with them what it did for me. I can remember that what Bill Wilson did for Bob was not to tell Bob about his drinking. Dr. Silkworth said to Bill Wilson, "Stop preaching at these drunks, telling them about a spiritual awakening and God and all this other stuff. They don't want to hear it, and it makes no sense to them." I can speak to them the language of the heart. I can speak to them the music of the soul, which is the pain and the torture that I have been through, and you can share yours with the still suffering compulsive overeater. We in this world today have epidemic proportions of obesity. In 1995, 96, something happened in this country that has never happened in the history of the world. A generation of babies were born with a shorter life expectancy than their parents. You did not come in here because things went well for you. You didn't wake up one day, I'll bet, and say, "Wow, life is great. I feel fantastic. I love the way I look. My wife looks just like a movie star. I'm going to go to OA and join." It's probably not your fate. I am convinced that the hell that drove you here can save a person's life. To that still suffering compulsive overeater, to the world, they are a person. To that person, you can be the world. You can light them up. You can light them up and give them something that the pay and way cannot. Hope. Dr. Bob said at the end of his life, "Let's not louse this thing up with complex psychological things that are of interest to the psychologist and the doctor." He said, "What this boils down to is love and service." Let's keep it simple. Love and service. We all know what love is, and we all know what service is. You don't feel confident sponsoring right now. You're only at your eighth meeting or your ninth meeting or your fourth meeting. You can extend your hand and say, "Hi, I'm Fred. Nice to see you. Hi, I'm Linda. It's good to see you. I'm glad you're here. Would you like to sit next to me tonight? Oh, have you had a newcomer's packet? Why don't I go get you one?" Test God. See if that doesn't come back to you in great measure. Because the greatest joy of my life today is watching people recover. And there are promises in step 12, if I can find them. There are promises in step 12. Again, if I can find them. I hope I can. Yes, they're on page 100. And here are the 12th step promises. Page 100. "Both you and your new man, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances." What is the message of Overeaters Anonymous? It is the message of the big book. That is the message. But when you come in and you have had the torture that you have had, you can give them something that the pay and ways cannot. Identification. We do not come in here and stay here for information. My God, there is information all over the internet and the television and the radio and God knows magazines and who knows where. Information abounds. But they can't get what you can give them. They have been thrown away by their families. They have been thrown away by their jobs. They have been discarded. Written off as worthless, fat garbage. Many of them have been raped and beaten and tortured, scorched by life. And they came in out of desperation. There should be Dutch doors on every meeting. And the top should be nailed shut and the bottom should be open, because if I don't crawl in, I will not stay. You can give them something that no one else can give them. Hope. Hope. Love. They can go home saying, I met a person at the meeting and they were adopted too. I met a person at the meeting and they had a broken leg too. I met a person at a meeting and they had been raped too. And on and on. The pay and ways can't give them that, but you got it and you can give it to them. If you're in fit spiritual condition. If you've got the program that you're working. And last, it says here, to practice these principles in all of our affairs. What are the principles again? They are the steps. The principles are the steps. The easiest place for me to practice these principles is in OA. And I'm in OA meetings about six or seven days a week. And each meeting that I go to is about 1 hour. So what if I were to practice these principles in the harder place to work it, and that's in the workplace? What if I could buy myself 8-9 hours worth of peace and serenity there? And the hardest of all places for me to work this program is in my home. The big book is about the steps. Why do you think there's chapters to the employer, to the family afterward, to the wife? Because this is where we practice and how we practice these principles in all of our affairs. If I practice my steps with my wife and she with me, we have a pretty peaceful relationship. We have our moments, absolutely do. Like anyone else, we've had a few loud discussions over the years, no question about it. And there have been speed bumps, some higher than others, that we have forged through. But what we know is that our life has to be grounded in the steps and in faith and in God, or we're going to be just like my parents, yelling and screaming at each other, and not for long, because eventually we'll just break apart. You know, in the world my folks grew up in, you know, they stayed together, and I wonder why, but okay. But the bottom line is that today I have a way of life, not just going to meetings, but a way of life, living in my home, living in my workplace, living in the world that I live in. You know, if I'm not careful and I'm not doing this, I will treat complete strangers that I meet on the street with more love and tolerance and kindness than I will treat my own wife. But when I practice these principles, love and tolerance and kindness, I can bring that to all areas of my life. Sometimes I fail. Sometimes I fall short of the chosen ideals. No question about it. But more often than not, I center my life with God and OA. It is the most glorious, most wonderful way of life that I know of. And I invite you to test this. If you haven't yet taken these actions, if you haven't yet done this, I invite you to do so. If you're sitting there thinking that it will not work for you, I bet it will. Have you tested it? Have you tried it? I invite you to come along with this book, with these steps, to utilize these things, and if you're anything like me, you will see the magic. I came into this world a very scared to death liar. I came into this world angry and jealous. I came into this world feeling inadequate and different. I came into this world as a fat kid. And I've been a fat kid my whole life. The weight defined me. It emasculated me. It ransacked me. It caused me pain and suffering beyond measurability. I have been taken by the food down every dark alley in the world, near death, near amputation. I lived in one pair of pants for years. Every garment I ever owned had cigarette burn marks in front of it and was stretched out and torn. Nothing fit, nothing looked right, nothing felt right, and I was suicidal. I went on my first date when I was 35 years of age. I really didn't start making a living until about, I would say, 15 years ago or so, 12 years ago or so. Now things have gotten a little icky, but you know, we'll be okay. What has brought that about? Not me. I don't know how to get out of my own way. And I certainly don't know how to get out of the way of candy or food or pizza. What I do know is that the 11 years of abstinence that I have had in Overeaters Anonymous is not the magic. The 500 pounds I've lost is not the magic. The magic is I don't want the food. The magic is I have a life. The magic is I have a house, and I have a wife, and I have a daughter, and I have a kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet that will solve any problem that I have. Humility, ego, they're very different things. My ego says you're different. My ego is separation from the group. I could look up at you. I could look down at you. I could not be part of you. Humility, the God-given ability that I have by doing the work to be one of many. All I ever really wanted to be was another bozo on the bus. All I ever wanted to do was be like you. Now I have a way of being one of many through my working of this program. It is the most glorious, the most rewarding way of life, and it's free. You can drop a buck in the basket if you want to, or $2 in the basket if you want to. If you don't want to, that's okay too. But I invite you to join with the people doing it to be one of them, one of many, and achieve humility. There's always three leads that I do every day. There's the one I plan, there's the one I do, and then there's the one on the plane I wish I had done. But that's just the way it works, I guess. I don't know. What I'd like to do, and I don't know what time it is, what I'd like to do is, if you would go with me to page 164, and what I would like to do is do that. And I would like to just give us about a 10-minute break. And then instead of a question and an answer, what I have been remiss in doing is I have not given any of you who have attended, some of the faces I've seen all three sessions and some are kind of in and out. What I would like to do is after we read this, I'd like to give you guys a chance to come up here and share because I have not done that yet and I am remiss for that. So please accept my amends if you've been at the other sessions. If you would, please go with me to page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. We did that in steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows, 4 and 5. Clear away the wreckage of your past, 6, 7, 8, 9. Give freely of what you find and join us, 10, 11, and 12. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you unto then. Thank you so much for having me at the 50th birthday party. I grew up as a fat kid. If I would have ever thought I'm going to be the big book study chair at the 50th birthday of OA, I don't know that I would have seen that possible. And if that ain't miracle enough for you, I don't know what is. So thank you very much for having me. You've touched me very much.
Thank you so much. Wow. Thank you.
Okay. Ooh, you're embarrassing me. My God, thank you. Let's take about... It's 10 after... Oh, 10. Let's take about a 10-minute break. Let's come back at 20 after 10, and then we'll open it up for sharing until 11.